Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin, you're listening to Up North News.
Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News for this Tuesday, September 6th, a Tuesday that it feels like a Monday. We're all kind of getting back into the swing of things. Some of us doing a better job than others. I completely forgot to warm up the coffee here. So I'm sitting here with a cold mug of coffee for this hour, which is what happens when you either, you know, make a pot of coffee at 5 o'clock in the morning, forget to microwave it, or as I'm subtly dropping hints now for loved ones that are listening, haven't yet received a Christmas gift of one of those desktop coffee mug warmers. I think that would be kind of nice here. Although that probably for everything else plugged in here in the home office, that just might put me over the edge. That just might, that might blow the fuse.
But. See, I have a friend that really likes theirs, but I move around too much where like I can understand it for you. It would be very nice. You're there at your desk. I've got to move around so much in the morning. What I did is I took advantage of a Labor Day sale yesterday. And I don't know, have you ever used any Brewmate products? They're kind of like these thermal can koozies, but they also have like coffee mugs and things, water bottles, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And they're very good at keeping things insulated, either hot or cold. And they have
what's the name of it again?
Brewmate, but it's like Brewmate. It's B-R-U okay. With the umlauts and then mate.
The umlauts.
Umlauts. Oh, okay. Oh, I'm technically at one point I was fluent in German. I don't use it a whole lot anymore, but took that.
I like that technically at one point were fluent.
They give you, after a certain amount of courses, they tell you that you have hit fluency level. And so that was kind of like one of those things where you get a nice little pat on the back, and then that was about it because I never used it again after college. But Brewmates had a sale yesterday, and so I got this giant 32-ounce tumbler that is going to be what keeps my coffee nice and hot going forward, because these mornings do tend to get a little long, and I've been realizing that I need more coffee in the mug that I bring with me to the studio here. And so that was my solution, and Labor Day sale I was taking advantage of before I went to bed last night.
So you're saying that this Up North News mug that I've been using since day one of the radio show, I need to throw this logo on some insulated tumblers and things.
There we go. Let's do it.
Marketing, kids. It's all about the marketing, he says, taking a drink of his coffee. I think we could do that. I don't know if the bosses will go along with it. I think I can pitch it. That's what I'm saying.
That's the least.
Whether there's a market for it, I don't know. Maybe if we get like a catchy, a catchphrase on the other side. How about Grandpa has a story?
There we go. Let's hear it.
I've noticed a trend here as I'm regaling episodes from my past. Maybe some takeoff of Grandpa has a story.
Otherwise, a sip of Wiscommon sense. There you go.
There you go. See, we can have some fun with this. I'm also noticing as we're getting back to the swing of things for the week here, there's a note from my trainer, and all I can see is on the lock screen, it says, hey, Pat, hope you had a good Labor Day weekend. And, then it cuts off from there. And I'm sure it's something along the lines of, didn't see you doing your workouts every day, buddy. How you doing? You getting back into the swing of things, which was actually more by intent then I have to let on, because while we're in grandpa mode here, if I now know that it's going to be a labor intensive day, like going around the entire house on a ladder cleaning windows, I'm not gonna put the workout in there as well, because that frankly is what took my knee out, was doing a regular workout, kind of heavier than what I'm doing now as a now old man, and then combining that with there was all kinds of cutting and stacking of firewood that particular day. So I use an app on the phone. It's a company called Future. My daughter works for it, so there's your free plug. And then you're assigned a trainer and you get all these workout routines that they tailor for you and everything. But it also means that your trainer, whoever it is texting back and forth, asking how a particular workout went, should we modify things? Or in this case, Paul, no, I didn't do any workouts on Saturday or Sunday. But I also had my little watch on, And my watch tells me that I did exercise. I exercised just fine, because it turns out going up and down a ladder a bunch of times and lugging that ladder around the house counts as exercise on the watch, Paul. So I'm good. And I'm actually hoping that that's what he said. Hey, looking at your watch data here, good job for you, you know.
See, Kelsey doesn't like when I do yard work, like mowing the lawn, because we have a self-propelling push mower. So I don't have a rider, but I do it. The front wheels are self-propelling when you push down on one of the bars. But since the vibration of using the lawnmower works my exercise ring on my Apple Watch as well, and she's like, how did you get that many minutes accomplished?
Did you tie that watch to the dog again? Yeah,
exactly. So she's not a huge fan of that aspect.
I will take it. I didn't know what it was gonna show, but it clearly did. So I will take that credit. What I found at the end of the day yesterday was, you know, to close one of your rings, you have to burn so many calories. And I really wanted to take my watch off. It was getting near the end of the day. And it was like, you have 7 calories left to burn. I'm like, all right, let's see. Do I take a walk around the house? I thought, no, I better check an email. I literally sat down to look at something on my computer and got the ding, you know, that sitting my butt in this chair burned enough calories to close my ring for the day. I'll take that, Paul. Paul's the best. I really do like him. Congressional candidate Brad Paff joins us next. You're up north. It's not that I set out to do all 70s music this morning with Spyro Gyra and now this, but I did say we were comparing radio stations that we were listening to over the weekend, and one that I was listening to is doing like a top 1,000 countdown of 70 songs. I mean, so that's just like, if you're ever going to set a live trap for me, just put a radio in there that's just going to do something like that, and I'm going to take that bait every time. This is Up North News for a Tuesday morning. I'm joined now by State Senator Brad Paff, the Democratic nominee for Congress in the 3rd Congressional District, hoping to succeed the retiring Democrat Ron Kind. Brad, good to see you, Senator.
Well, thank you, Pat, for giving me the opportunity. I hope you're well.
Very, very much so, but in part because, unlike, you know, when I was in your shoes as a state senator running for Congress, my weekend did not include an infinite number of parades and other events. And I'm going to take that. You know, glad you're doing it. You're doing the Lord's work. Wish you well. I'm just happy to take it off. But why don't we talk about people who are more productive and tell me about your Labor Day weekend?
Well, we had a great Labor Day weekend. First of all, I kickstarted it. I was in Black River Falls on Saturday for the powwow. And if you've never visited or had the opportunity to see a powwow, I encourage you to go to Black River Falls on Labor Day weekend. Wow, was it moving? And had the opportunity to meet a lot of people and to learn important cultures and traditions and history of our region. But then, of course, on Labor Day, I was in both La Crosse as well as the Chippewa Valley, Eau Claire, and a number of different events that were taking place as we celebrate the fact that the work of women, you know, of this district and of this country, you know, built this country. And we need to recognize that. You know, Pat, the thing is this, there's a lot of talk as far as what we can do in order to drive down inflation. And I will say one of the most important things that we can do is that we need to rebuild our manufacturing sector. If you look at why inflation is taking place, one of the major reasons why prices are going up is the supply chain problems. And if we want to fix the supply chain problems, we need to start manufacturing things here in America. We can't just rely upon a couple nations halfway around the world in order to provide us with all the consumer goods that we're looking for and our component parts into our automobiles and other manufacturing parts in our economy. So, you know, we have to build things.
I heard President Biden kind of refer to that yesterday in his remarks, and the part of my takeaway from his visit and some of our stories leading up to it is that a lot of those workers that you're talking about feel like they have an ally in the White House again, rather than, you know, somebody who's looking to, you know, redistribute income, meaning their paychecks, and distribute it upward. They feel like there's somebody on their side again.
Yes, and I believe, and quite frankly, they have someone on their side. Without a doubt, this administration, this White House, has been focused on the fact that we need to start building things again in this country. Let's face it, for the last 45 years or so, both political parties have made the decision that we don't need to manufacture in this country anymore. And I think COVID and what happened as far as the breakdown of their supply chain demonstrated the fact that that political philosophy, both on the right and the left, was wrong. And the thing is we need to start manufacturing things again in this country. And if you start looking at what's happening as far as our main streets within, you know, our smaller communities, but also our medium-sized communities like Wisconsin Rapids, you begin to see the what happens when we do not have manufacturing in this economy. You know, our quality of life goes down, our per capita income has gone down, that is unfortunate. You know, Pat, you and I both know that we know how to make things in this state here. Wisconsin is a very, very industrial state. We know how to engineer things. We know how to manufacture things. We've got a wonderful technology, background. We know how to do things in this state. And we've always been an important part of the overall agriculture and manufacturing supply chain. And it's long past time that we get back to reinvesting in that.
Keeping with the manufacturing theme, the state AFL-CIO has taken a look at the race, and I'm not terribly surprised. They think you're the better alternative in this one. But again, they don't play everywhere necessarily. And so they, like others, certainly understand the critical nature of this race and this district, not just for its constituents, but nationwide.
I agree, and I am very, very appreciative of the fact that the AFL-CIO here in Wisconsin has endorsed my candidacy. The thing is this, is the choice is very clear in this race for Congress, is which of the two candidates, either myself or Derek Von Orden, is on the side of working families. And it's very clear that I am that person. I mean, I've got a clear record of voting for and making sure that we have investments in our economy. May it be the highway and infrastructure and bridge projects at the state level, may it be the broadband investment that I led on in the state Senate, may it be in the fact that I'm the only one of the candidates here for Congress that actually has a plan when it comes to reinvesting in manufacturing and growing our economy here. You know, I'm running against somebody that, has no plan. I mean, his only plan is to go on Twitter and just regurgitate whatever the talking heads from the far right are saying on that particular day. And I think the people here in Western and Central Wisconsin know that we can do better.
So the folks who would be doing, you know, manufacturing in Western Wisconsin, Central Wisconsin, and everywhere are not, you know, homogenous by any sense of the imagination and require varying levels of education or training. And if you'll pardon some personal editorializing here, one of the things that truly bothers me is the knock that progressives get that they're somehow all about everybody's got to go get a four-year college degree, when I think the correct point of view has been, you know, support those colleges, but also support those technical colleges, support the training programs, and let's stop creating that kind of false battle, you know, between college, you know, elites and blue collar workers. We need them all. We need them all in the 3rd Congressional District.
That's exactly right, Pat. We need them all, without a doubt. And that's let's also call it what it is. I mean, the Republican Party found support for the working men and women in this district and in this country. Let's not forget which political party throughout the years has stood up and supported the working men and women in this country, and it's been the Democratic Party. The thing is this, in order to compete in today's manufacturing and today's supply chain, we need to have highly skilled engineers. We need to make sure that we have logistics and the background it takes for logistics. We need to make sure that we have an education system that starts at the K-12 level that provides the kind of CNC training, background information when it comes to computer work, in order to make the manufacturing the highly needed but highly skilled workforce that is important in order to, again, compete in today's economy. We have the technical colleges, we have the strong K through 12 system, and we also have the engineering and the chemistry and the labs through the 4-year universities in order to make sure that you know, we can compete and succeed with any state, any nation when it comes to today and tomorrow's manufacturing sector. And so, again, I call upon Silicon Valley. There's no reason why you need to source your parts on the other side of the world. Let's look here to the Midwest, particularly to Wisconsin. Let's source our parts here. Same, I call upon the U.S. auto manufacturing. There's no reason to source your parts in other parts of the world. Come right back home here to the upper Midwest. We've got the workforce and the skilled training and the education system in order to provide the tools that you need to succeed.
And yet, one of the more frustrating things over the past, you know, several cycles has been seeing the percentage of voters who are either union members or in union households vote for candidates and parties that don't have their interests at heart. And we see, you and I have been in politics long enough, Brad, to know what that is. They're hammering away at issues like crime and guns and, you know, overall spending, where spending might be done on somebody, you know, they don't like. And of course, you know, social issues. You know, you had Tim Michaels in the gubernatorial race and Ron Johnson, you know, talking about, you know, Democrats are this party of social issues, when fact of the matter is we're not leading with that, but we're also saying, you know, you can treat all people fairly. So, Brad, as you know, the blue collar labor force hears these messages about other issues, crime and guns and social issues and such, you know, how do you then help bring them back with an appeal for what matters at their kitchen table, rather than, you know, those baser instincts that, you know, Republican messaging is trying to trigger?
Well, that's a great question, Pat. And that is the $100 million question. The thing is this, as I will be clear, Derry Van Orden and the Republican candidate that I'm running against is playing upon people's fears. He's playing upon resentment. He's playing upon anxieties. And he's playing upon the fact that, again, the fact is that we have a very diverse state. We have a very diverse nation. And rather than trying to tear people down, you know, I'm trying to build people up. The thing is this, is that, you know, I'm from the country. I'm from the rural area. I've spent most of my adult life working on behalf of our rural residents of the state. I understand rural Wisconsinites. And I recognize the fact that, you know, at the end of the day, they want to continue to have an opportunity to succeed. And we need to make sure that we demonstrate that we are working for their best interest, and we want to grow an economy that gives them an opportunity to succeed. I mean, that is what is so near and dear to them. You know, they have every right to ask, you know, what has happened over the last 45 to 50 years in this economy, when we've seen a hollowing out of our manufacturing, when we've seen farms be consolidated to become larger and larger, and there's fewer and fewer people that you know, feel that they can make a living right now in the countryside. They've got every right to ask those questions. They've got every right to be cynical towards their political leaders. But then, as political leaders, we need to step forward and be able to demonstrate that we're hearing them, and we're trying to provide some answers to the solutions, some solutions to the problems that are out there, rather than something like Derry Van Orden, which he's just playing to the resentments and the cynicism that's taking place out there.
We're talking to Brad Paff about the 3rd Congressional District race. And as I predicted pre-primary, there's been no shortage of party unity post-primary. Deb McGrath and Rebecca Cook and Mark Newman have all quickly put themselves behind you and this campaign, which I think when you consider the fissure that's in the Republican side between the, you know, the far right wing and not, is really saying something for a race this crucial.
I agree. They're a class act. Primaries are not easy, but I will tell you, because we're all friends and we all share similar ideas and values. But the thing is this, I tip my hat to Rebecca Cook, Deborah McGrath, and Dr. Mark Newman. Those are class act people. You know, they worked hard. They've showed that they were willing to travel this district, listen to people, and they talked about the issues that mattered. And I am proud to call them friends, and I'm very, very appreciative of their support here in this race. And believe me, it's going to take everybody, all of us, rowing the same boat, moving forward here in order to hold this seat. So
we will have more with State Senator Brad Paff, candidate for Congress, coming up in just a bit. You're up north.
From Lake Wissota, once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Back now with more with State Senator Brad Paff, candidate for Congress in Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. Brad is also a member of the Wisconsin Legislature of the State Senate. You wouldn't know that, not because he's campaigning for governor or for Congress, rather, but because the legislature has put itself on hiatus. The Republican leadership there has. Governor Tony Evers has put forth a plan to do something with that $5 billion surplus that Republican leaders are sitting on. Brad, I know you're running for Congress, but if you could do some of your state Senate duties right now, what would you like to be doing?
Oh, well, I'll tell you what, Pat, it really is ridiculous, the fact that these Republican leadership in Madison adjourned this session in March. I mean, come on. There's so much work that needs to be done. The thing is this, is that Wisconsin's in a very good position when it comes to our budget right now. And we need to make some strong and important investments in our people. We talk about the supply chain and what more we can do as far as with manufacturing in our state. Wouldn't it be great if the legislature would be in session right now, and we could talk about working with our the business community as well as trying to end our labor community to try and regrow our economy. I also think it's extremely important that we invest in K-12 education. That is something that's so very, very important. It's something that we need to take a look at. Our local units of government have been strapped as well when it comes to roads and when it comes to bridges. So what more we can do in order to be able to help our local units of government is very important. But the thing is this, is that I would like to see us invest in healthcare as well. We know the high cost of prescription drugs. We know that we need to cap insulin. Those are simple things that we can do, and the state can step forward and do something. But instead, we're not. And it's really unfortunate right now the legislature has decided that they are so desperate to hold on to power, and they don't want to give Tony Evers and the Democrats any type of victory at all, that they will not step forward and assist the people of the state. And I surely expect that the voters come November will demonstrate their frustration with the Republican leadership in Madison through this election.
Well, and probably, perhaps at the same time, reward, Governor Evers for leadership. I'm seeing notes that he just announced this morning that, along with the previously announced $90 million investment into K-12, he's proposing nearly $2 billion for public schools around the state to address improved reading and literacy, expand mental health service and school nutrition, invest in financial literacy, out of school programming. This is all just to say, Senator, that leadership comes in many different forms. And if it's not going to come through the regular legislative process, and the same can be said in Congress, then you look for leadership, where you can get it, rather, especially when people just want to be roadblocks.
That's exactly right. And that's what we have to do. Hey, Governor Evers people underestimate him, and they should not underestimate him. He is somebody that's very forceful. He has a plan, and he will work very hard in order to make sure that people recognize the fact that, we have to continue to move this state forward. Unfortunately, Robin Voss and the Republicans in Madison have decided that, everything needs to come to a standstill until after this election. And the thing is, that's not how life works. And the voters out here recognize that. They have day-to-day challenges that they have to be able to meet. And they expect as legislators that we will work for them, and that we will be responsive to them, and we will make sure that their hard-earned tax dollars are working for them.
So we know what the Republican lawmakers are going to say in Madison, and the ones who are in Congress as well. Their response is going to be along the lines of, well, you know, Governor Evers is spending all this money, you know, that came through pandemic relief that's, you know, helped go to local budgets and local schools and such. You know, Congress has allocated all this money, and they have drawn a line between two dots, between the pandemic relief spending and other initiatives, infrastructure investments and stuff. They've drawn a direct line to inflation, which I don't necessarily, I don't think it's a direct line. I think they went in a rather circuitous motion to get there. But that's something I'm sure you're going to hear about, you know, whether spending in Washington has contributed to inflation at home.
Well, the thing is this, I think the Republicans need to recognize the full definition of what inflation is. What inflation is this, is it's money chasing too few of goods. So is there money that has been put into this economy through the federal efforts? Yes. Are there too few of goods? Let's look at the supply chain. And they're not talking about the supply chain. They don't have a plan in order to make sure that you know, this supply chain is functioning the way it should, and how we can make sure that this supply chain going forward is one that is built by American workers, and that we've got local manufacturing and domestic production that's taking place to supply the supply chain. They only want to look at one side of the inflationary argument, and they need to look at both sides of this inflationary argument. And again, I am the only candidate for Congress that actually has a plan to make sure that we tackle inflation. And we tackle inflation by investing in our manufacturing, growing local jobs, so consumers purchase goods that are made in America. I sure wish the Republicans would look at both sides of the argument when it comes to inflation, because inflation is real. It is impacting families back here. But rather than just putting the head in the sand like Derek Van Orden is doing and saying there's nothing that can be done and we just need to blame Biden and blame the Democrats, I'm leading. And I will continue to lead because that's what the people in this district look for.
So we've focused on manufacturing by and large, but we certainly can't forget the prevalence of farming throughout the 3rd Congressional District. And we spoke with Hans Breitenmoser in our last hour a bit about some of the provisions in the Inflation Reduction Act and the bipartisan infrastructure law that can and will, you know, do good for the rural economy. Is that something you get asked about as well when people ask about these programs and whether there will be direct benefit in the rural parts of your district and not just, you know, the big cities?
That's right. I do get asked, and I like to say this, is that if we want to grow the supply chain, we need to look at agriculture. Wisconsin is a tremendous agriculture state. In fact, agriculture provides $105 billion annually to our state's economy. The agriculture supply chain is immense. But in order to make sure that we can continue to grow our supply chain, we need to make sure that we've got a strong, you know, farming economy with, you know, with producers. And so one of the things that we need to continue to do in the Inflation Reduction Act step forward here is, you know, making sure that our soil, our land and our water and our air, you know, stays strong. And the thing is, conservation is so very, very important. Our family farmers can sequester carbon. And there's, you know, there's things in the marketplace that they can capture. They can be benefited financially by capturing this carbon. There's things that can be done, more incentives that can be put in place in order to watershed protection. So we keep clean air, clean water downstream. And again, our farmers should be part of that, should be financially compensated for the efforts that they put in. And also people should recognize that the good water that they have as a result of good land practices and soil practices that our farmers are investing in. All of that is extremely important. But let's face it, Pat, there's more that we can do in order to help our family farmers as they capture more of the dollar along the supply chain. And that's what the co-op movement was first set up with 100 years ago, is to help our farmers capture more of the dollar along the supply chain. we need additional efforts in that regard. We need to make sure that when it comes to antitrust laws, I think it's wrong that there's only 3 to 4 meat processors when it comes to beef that handle over 80% of all the beef that American consumers eat. There's so much more that we can do to help small meat processors in order to get into the business that will help our family farmers as well have another outlet for their cattle that they raise. There's so much effort that can take place if only we would try and if only we'd step forward. But again, we're not hearing that from the Republicans. We're definitely not hearing that from Derek Van Orden. Instead, all they're doing is blaming.
You have already enjoyed the support of your primary opponents that we talked about earlier. But one of the other weapons in your arsenal is the incumbent congressman from the neighboring 2nd District, Mark Pocan, who long before the race has not been shy about basically calling out Derek Van Orden for a host of things. And you appeared with him recently to, for all of the talk about issues, and they are all very important, but there are character matters at stake here as well, given Van Orden's very public record up to this point.
There surely is. I mean, the thing is this, the voters of this district have a clear choice here when it comes to going to the polls. They have the opportunity to vote for someone who has spent their entire adult life working on their behalf, who has voted for tax cuts, who's voted for the largest investment in broadband in the state's history, and someone who continues to advocate for reinvesting in our manufacturing sector. That's one choice. The other choice is someone who is on probation by the TSA because he tried to get on an airplane with a loaded handgun, who's verbally harassed a teenage librarian aide, who wrote in a book about sexually harassing verbally two nurses within the military. And on top of that, he was in Washington, D.C. in a restricted area on January 6th, that shameful, awful, deadly day. Derek Van Orden does not have the temperament, the judgment, or the character to serve in Congress. And I am confident that the people of this district will recognize that come election day.
But Brad, I mean, he looks like just your typical next door neighbor in that commercial, sitting on his motorcycle in the garage with the flag hanging. And there's a lot of money that goes into an ad that makes somebody, frankly, look like somebody they're not. This is a race where his image has got to be propped up by a lot of outside money. And that probably says something not just about the competitive nature of the race, but, who's in his corner helping prop up that image.
That's exactly right, Pat. And that's what's happening is that the amount of money that the Republican Party has right now, I mean, he's raised over $3.5 million, Derek Van Orden has. And that money hasn't come from this district or from the people here in Western and Central Wisconsin. It's come from places like Texas. It's come from California. It's coming from all over the United States who have this, extreme agenda. Because they recognize the fact that the people of this district are not going to elect someone who tries to get on an airplane with a loaded handgun, someone who verbally harasses a teenage librarian aide over a book display, and someone who was in Washington, D.C. on January 6th. They're not going to elect that. So they're doing everything they can to whitewash his image and to make him someone that he's not. Let's just share who he is. First of all, he's an interloper. He moved into this district in 2019 with the sole purpose of running against Congressman Ron Kind in 2020. When he ran against Congressman Ron Kind in 2020, no one really knew who he was. But again, he was part of that larger coattail effort during the last presidential election. Since that time, he's been a very busy boy. He was in Washington on January 6th and participated in the insurrection. He went to Prairie du Chien and verbally harassed a teenage librarian aide. And at the same time, he tried to get on an airplane with a loaded handgun. Nobody does this. This is not what the behavior and the values of the people of Central and Western Wisconsin. But that's what he does.
So all of that aside, then, your other opponent here is simple, I don't know what you call it, not inertia, but, people have said, well, it was represented by a Democrat for all these years. And so some of these congressional Democrats tend to swing. So for folks who aren't paying attention to those issues or the character issues, what is it that they need to know in a few seconds time here about the importance of keeping this seat in Democratic hands?
The thing is this, if they want a member of Congress who will work for them, who will put their head down and do the work that it takes in order to make sure the constituent casework that is important to make sure that we've got a member of Congress that is working for the people and the communities of this district. I am that individual. If they are looking for someone that's just going to regurgitate whatever talking points is coming from the National Republican Committee, then Derek Von Orden is their candidate.
All right. State Senator Brad Path, I sure appreciate the visit. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Pat. Appreciate the opportunity. Have a good day.
You too. You too. I know he's got a lot of miles to put on around that district. We will wrap up this hour's conversation next. You're up north. As you know, every couple of weeks, we talk to our friend, political analyst Joe Zepecki. He has a new column up at upnorthnewswi.com talking about why Joe Biden's democracy speech in Philadelphia last week was so important. And the reasons should be self-evident, but I don't know that they can be told too often. Joe notes that last week, Senator Ron Johnson blasted fellow Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss for shutting down the sham investigation by Michael Gableman, that thing that cost you and me more than $1 million and didn't find a scintilla of fraud that would affect the 2020 election. We learned last week, he notes, that one of the 10 fake electors from Wisconsin is actually on the campaign staff of Ron Johnson, who himself was perhaps minutes away from being a mule for a fraudulent ballot with fake electors to take to Vice President Pence on that January 6th day. We learned on Thursday, the State Department of Justice has charged a right-wing activist from the Racine area with voter fraud after he illegally requested the ballots of some public officials. And of course, we talked about how Ginny Thomas, the right-wing activist and wife of a Supreme Court justice, is revealed to have urged conservative Wisconsin lawmakers to overturn the results of the 2020. So all of these things necessitated a speech like this from a president, any sitting president, not just Joe Biden. Any sitting president should look at the threats to our country from somebody who is still seeking to be installed as some kind of a wannabe authoritarian strongman, because apparently dictator scares people off when you say that, but he wants to be declared the winner of an election that he lost fair and square. And it would be wrong for a sitting president not to call that out. But I couldn't help but notice a column on Press Watch created by Dan Frumkin, media critic and longtime editor at The Washington Post, who wanted to provide or wanted to tell us about something that was really missing in the aftermath of Biden's speech. And that was fact checking. We're used to it from Donald Trump because, again, he broke the meter on fact checking. But Frumkin notes he would have loved to have seen some fact checks on the threats to democracy and whether Biden was right or wrong. And Dan Frumkin writes, Biden said MAGA Republicans, quote, promote authoritarian leaders and fan the flames of political violence that are a threat to our personal lives, to the pursuit of justice, to the rule of law, to the very soul of this country. Was Biden right or wrong? Biden said MAGA Republicans refuse to accept the results of a free election and are taking steps to undermine them going forward. Was Biden right or wrong? Biden said MAGA Republicans see the insurrectionists who violently attempted to disrupt the transition of power as patriots. Was he right or wrong? And as Frumkin continues, any halfway reality-based fact check would have ruled true, 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 and true. And yet there was no such fact checking because national media does not want to engage these questions head on. And he's right. They stuck to their business as usual. They marginalized mentions of the threat to democracy as some kind of a purely partisan attack. They cast the speech as a campaign. They quibbled about the optics and whether a couple of Marines in the background are good or bad. We could point you to like every president ever who had members of the military in the background. But was he right? Was he right in what he was saying? Luke, I know we talked about it last week. Are there still, do we use up all the clips from his Philadelphia remarks, or is there anything left in the bin?
But as I stand here tonight, equality and democracy are under assault. We do ourselves no favor to pretend otherwise.
I feel like that's the clip that needs to be talked about, and it covers exactly what you're saying. Pretending that democracy and equality are not under assault.
There's a lot of pretending here, but there's pretending on the part of the national media that democracy is not under assault. There's a lot of pretending going on by Trumpies who want to claim that there was some kind of, you know, funny business, and that you can't continue to pretend that the people who are pretending the election had fraud aren't a danger, because in fact they are. They are as clear and present a danger as it comes, given what could have happened on January 6th, given what certain Republicans now on the ballot have said they would do to help rig elections, what Republicans currently in office have done to rig the maps that help determine our elections. And finally, the Republicans on the ballot who have not been vocal about any of these things, but who are conspicuous by their absence, by their lack of criticism. Again, why is it only, you know, Liz Cheney? Why is it only Adam Kinzinger from Illinois? Why is it on a limited basis State Senator Kathy Bernier from up here in Chippewa Falls? Why is that list so small? That is a list of people who are pretending it will go away. This is not going to go away. This is something that has only been building momentum, especially as prior misdeeds are not punished. Richard Nixon was pardoned for everything that he did in the Watergate scandal. There was no follow-up on, you know, George W. Bush and the Iraq War. To this point, Donald Trump has been investigated more in so many more ways than it feels like every other president, you know, put together, and yet has not faced real consequences. And now we're waiting to see if there are consequences either from his efforts to overturn the election or stealing top secret documents, classified information, the nation's most closely kept secrets, leaving them in cardboard boxes or wherever they are now, because it's not clear that some of these top secret documents haven't been removed and are in somebody else's hands who has no business seeing them. And yet we're still waiting for consequences from that. And if there are no consequences for these things, what in God's name makes you think that those same folks are going to run an election on the up and up next time around? And next time they're able to control state election mechanisms, whether it's the Secretary of State's office here in Wisconsin or the Congress of the United States. These are things that have to guide not just the vote of president in 2024. Does Donald Trump run? Does Joe Biden run? What if there is a rematch? You know, that might make things stark, but it starts right away this fall with the people who are on the ballot, the ones who are pretending these things aren't happening or pretending that they're minor or pretending that they just go away. They're going to get a lot of votes this year from people who are also pretending, but you can't build a democracy, much less preserve it, by pretending that the very threats to its existence aren't there. We'll have more in our next hour. You're up north.